Welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 126, and I'm here driving, and I hear that we've been a little loose behind the ship. I don't really care, because this is how we record our podcast. If you don't like it, go find something else.
Whoa.
Not to sound like a conceited asshole, but you know, we're here to bring you the goodness that we got, because it's contained within our brains right now at this moment. And for some reason, we happen to be recording during the daytime because one of our fellow co-hosts, Corbin, he still hasn't recovered from his trip in France.
Is he even a co-host anymore? Like, I think we've had Ray on approximately as many times as Corbin in the past month or so.
Yeah, I think I've passed Corbin in a number of episodes I've done.
Yeah, I actually feel like that might be true now.
This is probably an actual fact. Oh, man, we need to find the metrics on that. So, Jason, well, what do you think of your new title as the third host of the cast? What are you going to do with this?
Third? Did I get demoted from first?
Yeah, I was going to say, you really think Jason didn't consider himself the driver? All right, you say you're the driver, but he's like, all right, Marcel, you sit up there and drive the limo while I'll sit in the back.
This is true. Jason is the talent. He is
He's not the talent. Remember, I'm the talent. I kept that title. What did we come up with for Jason?
Corbin was the diva, and I was the...
What did I call you the other day, Jason? I said something like, Jason is the center of the cast. He's like got a little bit of everything because, you know, I'm just like disconnected from the personal people. I don't really do much as far as like picking up cards or trading anymore. That's more of a Corbin thing. You're the personality, Marcel, and Jason's like a good little hybrid of everything.
Jason's the asshole. That's probably the best way we could describe him.
I mean, if Marcel's the cast head, then I'm the ass.
There you go.
Get behind that, I guess.
Come together like Voltron. We're an organism that's like a human centipede. And whatever I eat, I only eat the good stuff. So Jason, whatever comes out of you is only to be the good stuff. So let's bring the good stuff.
Don't put human centipede on the cast. That's gross.
That's like the least objectionable thing I think we've ever said.
I don't know why I find that so personally offensive, but that's messed up. Anyway, we should talk about things that are magic related since we have a lot of them that happen.
If you insist.
So what's coming out of you now, Jason? What do you got to spiel for us?
I'm going to drop some sick wisdom on everybody. What's our first topic?
Finance 101!
Tell you what, there was something that we wanted to hit on Finance 101, and funny enough, one of our dedicated listeners, Leo Newbell, sent us an email that deals with that topic a little more in depth. So let's read Leo's email and let's segue right into Finance 101.
So his email is read, is saying that...
You're stalling.
I got it right here.
He's trying to teach himself to read real fast. He's like, shit. I knew that would come up.
So to the guys who run some small microbrew no one has ever heard of, shout out to you too.
That's a jab at Jason.
I'm not going to stop wearing the hoodie, damn it.
I haven't once told people we're a brewery. So, like, I just go on and give them this nerd ramble, and they're like, they just look at me like, oh. So I probably should, honestly. I'm going to start doing that.
No, see, I say brewery as the way just to end the conversation instead of saying, yeah, it's a podcast. What's a podcast? And the whole, oh, man.
Nobody ever asked me. Maybe it's because I don't leave my house. So, like, that could be a determining factor. But, like, if I have the shirt on in public, no one's just like, what is Brainstorm Brewery? Like, I see plenty of random things like that in people's shirts. I don't go around and ask them. Maybe you should tell people I could be so goddamn nosy.
Yeah, that's how we're going to grow our brand.
Well, I mean, if you're telling them it's a brewery, that certainly isn't growing your brand.
Sure it is, if I want to sell beer someday.
Hey, we might
sure,
make it.
Sure, I guess.
I was talking to some people. If we came out with $100,000, we can actually get something going.
All right, back to the email. We're not starting a brewery, boys.
We're not starting a brewery. Listeners, we're not starting a brewery. Don't listen to Ryan.
Turn this train around, Marcel. Okay. You're back in the driver's seat.
Marcel made it one sentence into the email.
Yeah. This is why Marcel doesn't read the emails.
Marcel, you can't drive the train if you're that easy to derail.
I did this. I left the opening pause for lots of reactions. So this is exactly what I manufactured. So, you know, we're going with this. We now know what I'm doing.
No drinking and train driving.
There's no drinking involved. It's too early for that. But you really...
3 o'clock your time.
It's almost 4:20. So you recently mentioned that it should be easy to drop off about 20,000 commas and commas for some financial gain, but briefly mentioned the ways that a person can go about that. I have a TCG player store and just signed up for Puka Trade and had tried bulk listings in the past on eBay and am holding on to about 20,000 cards, with a chunk of them being bulk and commons and commons. While it feels good to have such large inventory, it's really preventing me from moving into more inventory. So here are my questions. If I were going to ship these to a buy list, where would you recommend first? Do I start local or do I look at some more popular store? If so, which ones are best to ship out to?
Cool Stuff Inc. has a pretty decent buy list for stuff like that because they tend to pay a little bit more if you separate stuff out a little bit more. If you're willing to take the time to, like, find new border uncommons, they pay a little bit more per thousand on old stuff like that. And the old border stuff, yeah. And if you're willing to, like, separate your basic lands and separate them into basic land types, they pay a little bit more for that. So if I'm just selling bulk and I have a little bit time to really squeeze money out of it, I would sell the Cool Stuff. If you're just looking to just dump it, Troll and Toad has never turned down any amount of bulk from me.
Yeah, Troll and Toad's number is just really low right now. Cool Stuff is probably your best bet if you're going to do it online. I've never really heard of a store that's consistently higher than them. I have heard of prices getting as high as theirs, but overall they've pretty much consistently been the industry high as far as just bulk goes. But like Jason said, it's usually if you want the extra dollar out of it, you've got to put a little more effort into it. Shipping to Florida is
saying that because we're on Gathering Magic, like literally Cool Stuff is where I ship bulk like that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily just because the shipping cost into it is pretty expensive. Your best bet also, if you're going to ship the bulk, is flat rate mailers. You can get about 7,000 cards in a large flat rate, and that costs you about $16 to ship, which isn't great because it's quite a hit off of your bulk. But if you were willing to ship it out.
No, you can fit about – how many cards did you say fit in a flat rate?
7,000 in a large flat rate.
Yeah, those are like $12 to ship.
Oh, is it $12? All right, whatever it is. Cody does all my shipping. I don't actually have an idea what it costs. I just see what comes out of my PayPal account every time he goes to the post office. I mean, that's just not the part of the business I handle. But either way, I mean, you're taking a bit of a hit for sure because, $12 – if you were paying to send a bunch of good cards, doesn't seem like much. But when you consider that that's essentially $2 or, $1.50 that you're sending, then it's, it makes a little bit more of a difference. And that really does make it worth separating out to get that extra cash off of it. If you're just shipping it $5 a thousand to somebody, you got to understand that, shipping, it's going to cost you $1.50 a thousand. So you're really not going to be making that much, which means you can probably find a store locally that would at the very least be willing to buy it for $4 or $3. And that's usually better value than shipping it if you're not going to take the time to separate it out. That's really for this 20,000 mark. If you have way more than that and you can do something like a pallet, it's a different story. And if you have way less than that, then it's not worth shipping at all. So really, if you're in that happy margin where, you have somewhere between 20 and 50,000 cards, that's the best way to go about it. But it really differs based on how many cards you're trying to move at once.
So next question is, in creating bulk lists for eBay, what are the best practices to do this? What's the amount of commas and commas to put in? Do you put X amount of value on commons and uncommons, or do you just shuffle the pile and throw it in together?
Don't do it on eBay.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many people doing it now. I had mine up for a while, and then they quit selling because everyone just kept – it was essentially what happened to TCG Player. Everyone got the idea of like, hey, I'm going to sell these lots, and now they're down to the point where, again, shipping them, you might as well just send them to somebody in bulk because you're not going to actually make anything. If you're really dead set on doing it, I would suggest doing something along the lines of putting rares in as well and making more like instant collections than actual just bulk lots.
Instant collections sell really well at my LGS. So I would recommend locally Craigslist, maybe have a deal with the LGS. I wouldn't advocate eBay.
So moving on from this into Finance 101.
Okay, so we were going to do a Finance 101 this week, but someone decided to send us an email with 35 questions in it. So, really, there's not much left about that issue to talk about, so thanks a lot for that, Nubel, you jackass.
Yeah, it's a true story. All right, moving forward, this is me throwing
Ryan
my arm in
the
air.
Ryan thinks the podcast is live, everybody.
It is live. I'm listening to it live. I have to listen to you jackasses through all of the edit and stuff. No, I go and listen to the actual podcast. It sounds so beautiful. And it's like we all like get along and there's nobody in the background like clinking around or like you can't hear a dog start barking. And there's just like a lot of things that are, you know, luckily missing.
Yeah, Marcel's got a new program that edits Corbin out entirely. So I really feel our episode quality's gone up since he's
It really has. Yeah, I don't know. It's really nice because like you don't even notice Corbin's not here because it's just like there's no repeating what Jason says. But really, like it's actually just the regular podcast otherwise. Now, if there was only a way to delete that part of Corbin while we were actually recording.
If we could go back through all the previous episodes and take him out like we work at the 1984 Information Bureau, that would be perfect.
I think we're onto something. That should be a new plug-in.
We could call it Brainstorm Brewery Light and just like go all revisionist history on our past episodes.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, it's a Brainstorm Brewery Light, and then if we want to add Corbin back in, it's Brainstorm Brewery Light with lime.
Brainstorm Brewery Bud Light.
Speaking of Bud Light, why don't we talk about Modern Masters 2?
Oh, that was a train wreck of a segue, but I'm in. Modern Masters 2. So first off, Vegas. Vegas, everybody. Vegas, and if not Vegas, funny. Then somewhere in Europe and somewhere in Asia, because I didn't look at the other two places, so sorry. But for us, Vegas, you know, we can really talk about the one other major event that's happening this year, too. We could talk about how Christopher Walken will be playing Hook this year, and I'm very excited to see that happen.
Christopher Walken playing Captain Hook.
Yeah, he's like, this is a fucking crocodile. He took my hand.
The fucking croc. It took my hand at the wrist, and I'm like, God damn, crocodile. What are you thinking? I need both my hands to kill Peter Pan and all the lost boys, and you're biting off my fucking hand. Can't have that.
I would kill you. Yeah, they're like, no, seriously, though. I'm excited to go see that movie for no other reason than that. But no, the real big news this year, Modern Masters 2. I think at this point, everyone kind of saw the writing on the wall. We knew it was coming, but it's nice to have that official announcement. It's also nice so I can quit hearing about everyone talking about how it's going to be Legacy Masters, because, I was getting sick of refuting that argument over and over again.
I considered blocking people on Twitter for using the phrase Legacy Masters.
I get where the mentality comes from. However, like, I don't know, maybe it's just because I've been in the business long enough, but like, no. That can't happen. It's not okay.
They're going to get rid of the reserve list, you guys. Now, Modern Masters is a real thing. So it wasn't a real big leap of logic when they announced Grand Prix to be determined. We kind of figured that it would be an unannounced format, and that unannounced format was Modern Masters 2 sealed. So they kept the cat in the bag for as long as they could. I'm glad that we get to be in Las Vegas on the weekend of May 30th, because that is going to be my birthday, and I could not think of a better birthday present.
Wait, we're going to be there the weekend? You got this completely wrong, Jason. We're not going to be there the weekend of the 30th. We're going to be there the week leading up until the weekend of the 30th.
The week of the weekend of the 30th.
Yes, we will be there for 7 days. We got our house booked, and it is filled, but we're trying to get a second house filled, so if anyone's interested in attending, hit me ASAP. We're trying to get everyone else that's on Watson on the second house together so that can work. But yeah, we will be there for a week from Tuesday the 26th until June the 1st. That's a Tuesday to Monday for 7 days. And the event itself is going to be from Thursday through Sunday. So it's going to be a 4-day event, just like how Portland was. So if you, went to GP Portland, you've seen how Cascade and Channel Fireball handled that situation. You'll get an idea of how Vegas will be, but just scaled out much bigger, because we got a 10,000 person capacity on this one, boys. How do you feel about that?
That could be enough, because I don't like that they capped it, because I think there are people that were local that would have made the trip that did not because they heard it was capped. So not capping the GP, well, I mean, like 10,000 is not a real cap. You know, saying like, oh, we'll take up to twice as many people as have ever come to a Magic tournament. You know, and twice as many people that have come. If they go over...
I mean, it depends, though. You got to remember, every person like us who went to the actual first Modern Masters has talked about it so much and hyped it up so much that I think I'm going to get flagged for this, but we might come real close.
I think we'll hit.
I would absolutely safest FOGO bet ever saying we won't get 10,000 people.
I would not be surprised to see 8,000 plus people.
And you know what? That would be two GP Vegases. If there are 8,000 people, they will split it up and it'll be two 4,000 man GPs.
No, it would be four.
If they split it into four, it would still be. Well, I mean, Vegas last year was 4,000 person. So yeah, you know what? They have all this time to prepare for it. They did, for being flat-footed last time, they did, Cascade did a really good job with GP Vegas 1. So I've got nothing but optimism for GP Vegas 2.
I think it's going to hit 10 grand.
You think it's going to hit 10? I thought you were with Jason on this.
Wow, all right. No,
I think it's going to hit a solid 10. We're going to hit capacity just because.
I think the weekend's going to be a solid 10 out of 10 because it'll be my birthday.
I think the week's going to be a 10 out of 10, and I'm not going to care what happens by the weekend.
Get hyped.
Get hyped.
Yeah, so that's save right. your money now. You got six Get months. Hyped. So I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry you couldn't have been sooner. Or couldn't, you know, they should have told us, you know, give you 9 months or almost a year to try to figure this out because you want to save up your money, get your PTO accumulated so you could take time off for this event and make it to Vegas.
If you make one Grand Prix ever, this has got to be the one.
Yep. This is it. Even if you're not, if you don't know about the heavy meta SVU and how it gets down, this is going to be the SVU event for 2015. But if you don't know how much fun that, you know, us as a community can have together, like this is like Woodstock in a way from the Magic people is the best way that it was described when we did it, the first Vegas. And I think the Magic will be relived again because there's, you know, we've been around the corner a few times. We figured out how to handle these events and, you know, everything has been a shell in comparison to what Vegas was. And
now here's a tweet from a listener. He says, I'm getting married the weekend of May 30th, 2015, so I can't make it to GP Vegas. What should I do? My answer is, if there's a choice between a wedding and a Grand Prix in Vegas, you should go to the Grand Prix in Vegas. That's been my experience.
Yeah, I mean, we're one for one on that being correct. So I imagine given those, you know, previous high statistical odds that it has to be correct again.
Yeah. Even if you live on the East Coast, you got to make a reason to get out here. Like, you know, make the trip. Vegas is a destination city. You can find cheap flights. You want to find your flight, four to 3 months ahead of time and just get there.
Yeah, ideally you book your flight pretty much about the time you're listening to this podcast, I imagine. Especially if you're expecting 10,000 people. Jeez, Marceau.
I think more than 10,000 people go to Vegas every hour, so I don't think that's going to be a huge deal in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
Book your hotel now, for sure.
I mean, I'm just trying to get people hyped. Hyped.
Get hyped! But if you suck at life and you just can't make it work, it's not a total loss for you because you still do have something to show for what happens this weekend. And that is the fact that they're doing another Modern Masters 2 set and you'll be able to draft it at your LGS. So let's talk a little bit about what we know about Modern Masters, what they're calling. They're not calling it 2. They are skipping 2013 and numbers and going straight from Modern Masters 1 to Modern Masters 2015. So what we know for sure is that Emrakul is in at Mythic. We have Etch Champion is sort of the face of the set. And we know that they are going to be 24 15-card booster packs to a box. MSRP on a pack is $10. This is not – they're saying limited print run, but they are saying not at the scale that Modern Masters 1 was a limited print run, which could mean anywhere from they're making twice as much to they're making 10 times as much. We really don't know. What we do know is that it is – not going to be an unlimited print run, but it's not going to be as limited as Modern Masters 1 was. We know that online the booster packs are going to be $7, and it's not going to be eligible for redemption on Modo. So that's about all we know for absolute certain, but there's a little bit we can speculate on. I think a lot of us think that the fact that they're calling it Modern Masters 2015 is a little bit suspicious, and it could indicate that they are going to do this, if not every year.
Every year.
It could be every year, and it could be every other year.
No, I don't know. I got this.
They got rid of core sets, exactly. Take it away, Ryan.
Yes.
Yeah, I got this. It's the new core set. It's perfect. It fixes all the problems you have with core sets. You don't have to put new cards in like you started having to do to interest the players. It's all reprints. You can create your own limited environment. You can shape it and mold it, and you can make each color do something different with each core set. So it's not like, oh, red has to be all burned, because think about how many cards you have to draw from. And you just kind of concentrate on, like, say you need to reprint, you know, Noble Hierarch at one point. Okay, well, maybe green's thing is Exalted and having to do with creatures' powers, and maybe down the road, you know, you throw in, like, you could throw mechanics like Ferocious in with, like, the ones from Shards that was 5 power or more, Exuberant, stuff like that. And you can do all sorts of cool stuff. Like, there's a lot of mechanics throughout time that would have worked very well together, and it just never saw the light of day together in any sort of limited environment, and now you get the chance to do that. I think the only thing you were talking about earlier is the price restriction, right? So, like, that is going to make it a little more difficult to make accessible. I hadn't really thought about that initially, but I think that this is going to be something we're going to see every year. It just completely makes sense. It's not something that the players are going to be angry to see come out. And if you don't play Modern, you're strictly a standard player, all they essentially did for you was make the core set more exciting, or the current existing core set more exciting, in the sense that they'll be printing a 4th standard set. And you don't have to any longer worry about picking up core sets, because they're only for the Modern or older players.
Well, I mean, even if it's not every year and it's every other year, I still think it'll be good. Now, some people have expressed the notion, like, $10 a pack, how does this possibly lower the barrier of entry to Modern? You know, it's still super expensive if I'm buying a $10 pack trying to get a $1, you know, Kega or something like that. And what I think this does is it's going to have a lot of people drafting, because I'll pay extra for the draft format. You know, a lot of people will. I bet all the boxes your LGS gets will either get sold or drafted, you know, no matter how much they get, and no matter how much they charge for a booster pack. The stuff's going to all be gone, you know, by the time a few months have elapsed. So with all those new copies of cards being injected to the market, even if you don't buy a single booster pack, you're going to notice that's going to have a profound effect on singles prices. So it actually will lower the barrier of entry to Modern. And buying booster packs to try to build a Modern deck isn't really feasible anyway. So it's not like if it were $6 a pack, you'd be like, oh, well, I'm just going to buy boosters until I get 4 Ravagers and can build an affinity deck. No, I don't think that's the case. I think this will absolutely have a profound effect on singles prices. I think it'll be more pronounced than it was last time around, because they saw what happened, which was it wasn't Chronicles, and it also didn't really affect the price of Tarmogoyf and Dark Confidant, and Cryptic Command and Click, and all those cards they were trying to bring down and make cheaper. So they know that they can probably print more, not ruin the game, and bring those prices down.
It did affect those prices. It just made those prices go up. So they realized that, you know, they didn't create Chronicles 2.0, and that they're probably safer here. And we're going to see some other commons, but we're not going to get Innistrad here. So we're going to see some cards that are safe, like Liliana of the Veil is not going to be in this one, even though she has potential to be reprinted elsewhere. Guys of Saint Draft is not going to be reprinted here.
Snapcaster is a big one, because that's a non-mythic.
So that's good to see that there, and that we got more cards potentially in the future there. And I think, yeah, what Ryan is saying, if this does happen to occur every year after the next set in the 2016, that will probably run out of all the Modern sets that they have to do, and then they'll probably do a jumbled, mixed-up collection of potential sets, and that seems like a really good way just to play around with the draft format and create some fun, limited environments, as well as getting good reprints out.
All I'm saying is, if you didn't get a chance to draft Modern Masters 1, you missed out. Outside of potentially a well-built cube, I have not played a more fun, limited environment. And I'm very excited at the fact that we may be able to do that once a year. The limited, you know, Timmy and me really, really, really is excited for this. And I don't really care that much about competitive Magic anymore, but I will always be willing to draft this set.
So I heard some retailers and store or bot owners complain about this, that this is, again, Wizards not respecting the impact that this does for people that are trading singles. How do you feel like a constant reprint is for you guys? And
I feel like anyone who is complaining about that is not actually a retailer. Like, no offense against those people, but
offense anyone against those people.
I mean, I guess, yeah, like, don't talk about what you don't know. Like, that's what those people are doing. Those are the people who are like, oh, if A happens, then my line of logic means B has to happen. That's not true at all.
These are the people that said like, SCG announcing Modern Opens was going to kill Legacy. Like, a lot of people with the loudest voices don't necessarily know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, does that mean is it hard to now hoard cards, or is it just not good?
You shouldn't be hoarding cards. You should not be hoarding cards that don't have the words reserve list labeled on them somewhere. Like if you are not picking up those cards and holding onto them for a long time, then you're doing it wrong. There are fine speculations, and you can still play the speculative market. This is only coming out once a year, boys. It's not like we're releasing modern cards in every set, you know, and releasing them in huge quantities. Like, yes, there's going to be one or two cards probably in each standard set, and then you're going to have this influx with Modern Masters every year, every 2 years, or whatever it may be. That's not going to kill the market. Cards like Tarmogoyf that are in huge demand will probably hold most of their value. They're going to drop slightly because I think there's going to be more of a print run this time around. Like they said, it's going to be limited, but not as much. So I would say if like Goyf was in this set, say, instead of being $150 to $200, Goyf might drop down to $100, but I don't think it's going to be forced any lower than that.
I don't think especially he's going to be in the set.
I mean, not necessarily. I'm just using Goyf as an example. Gotcha. If it had been in Modern Masters,
well, hey,
2,
why don't we talk
Modern
about
Masters
what we do think is going to be in the set? Because there's some possible, based on what we know, I think there's some possible moves to be made right now. I would not hold on to Mox Opal. And the reason I say Mox Opal is because I think there will be Metalcraft support, given the fact that Etch Champion is in the set. So I don't think there's going to be as much Storm and combo stuff if that's the case, because they don't really like super easy mana in Limited. I think that was something they didn't really want, like a super reliable Storm deck in Modern Masters 1. So it was sort of like, oh, here's the Pyromancer Swath crap deck. And then you would just always lose to Kiki Jiki Pastermite. But I really think that Mox Opal will be in this set, and I think while the buy list prices are still relatively good, you probably want to just get rid of them.
I think we will probably see Phyrexian Mana in this set because they know that it's something that is very difficult to reprint. And I think the legend cycle in this set will be the Elishnorn,
Praetors
cycle, the Shieldred. Yep. The Praetors, I think, will be what we see as the dragon cycle this time around.
You think so? They have five mythics that are no good.
What are you talking about?
Dragons, and they're great and limited. Like,
what are you
one
talking
of those,
about? The Praetors are retarded.
Elsa's the good. I mean, they're good and limited, but I mean,
they're good in EDH.
Yeah, but I mean, what are the prices besides Elsh? I mean, everything else is pretty cheap, right?
No.
No, not really. I mean, they're not the most expensive, but they are.
Like, the red one's
something.
Not super expensive, but the green one is probably the one everyone thinks is the cheapest because they're wrong. Huh. Yeah, the green one's super expensive. Jinkataxis, retaining value fine.
Jinkataxis.
Shieldred
is
hurt by the fact that there's a promo of it.
Yeah.
Not
and
the
honestly,
fact that the
like,
Praetors aren't good.
Well, look at it this way. The Dragon Cycle they did from Kamigawa, they bumped those from Rare to Mythic. So this doesn't even have the bump attached on because they were Mythic already, right?
Yeah,
so
I see.
You're not really hurting that. And also, you're like that cycle is much more exciting than that Dragon Cycle.
Yeah, there's no Kega. Like, or there's no Jugen in this cycle. They're all solid in some format or another, which means there's demand for them.
Yeah. I mean, none of those are bulk rares or bulk mythics, although some come close. Oh, the red one. No, the red one's still not bulk. Urbrask is still worth something, right?
Yeah.
So I think he's actually gone up fairly recently. But so if none of those are bulk going in, it means they're probably going to have a better time holding value as opposed to the Dragon Cycle. The reason those really flopped is because most of them were already bulk. You had Kakusho and Yosei and Kaiga in some sense. But Hugin and – oh, goodness. What's the red
one?
Hugin
and Ryusei.
Ryusei. Yeah,
they have real limited utility.
They were worth nothing going in.
Now, this is called Modern Masters, but let's be honest. There's real EDH applicability. So we're going to see the price of some EDH staples go down, and I don't want to be holding a ton of EDH stuff going into this. I think stuff like Mind's Eye, you know, could possibly be affected. Some cards like that. You know, there was some stuff like Stonehewer Giant and Divinity of Pride. And stuff like that last time that took real big hits. I expect to see another round of that, and I think that's fine because I think EDH cards should be affordable.
I hope they do some Legions.
I think the big thing to watch out for is not necessarily to sell out of everything now. Legions are a good one, though. I think it's actually just to kind of keep an eye on it because they're going to announce the mechanics, or you'll see like them spoil one card. It'll be kind of about the mechanic, and from that you can start to extrapolate what each color is going to be doing, just like what Matter Masters did. Like, you know, Doubling Season made sense because you had a token theme. They're not going to really put cards in that don't have some backing behind them.
It won't be arbitrary reprints. They'll fit stuff in that like works within the context of the set, but is also an overpriced EDH staple that they would like to relieve some pressure from. They did a really good job with it the first time around. I don't think they'll be clunky and ham-handed this time, especially because they've had 2 years to work on the set.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else we want to talk about as far as Modern Masters go before we end up using the whole cast on that?
Because it's really financially relevant, the fact that they've finally admitted that this set's coming out. And the announcements that they've made has given us some information we can glean. And I think it's been fun to try to put together a picture based on some,
Well, then, how about this? Let's hybrid some stuff together. Let's go ahead and do our pick of the week while we're on this subject. Otherwise, we're going to pick of the week ourselves out of this week.
Well, my pick of the week actually has nothing to do with Modern Masters 2. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make my pick of the week based on Modern Masters 2. I don't know what it is yet.
It's time for the pick of the week.
I'll make mine. Is the obvious one, Geist of St. Traft, just because that card's, again, seemed to be very powerful within the modern format. It's fairly, reasonably priced for what it is, even though, is it a mythic or is it a rare?
It's mythic, right? It's mythic. It's mythic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty reasonably priced for what it is right now, and it's not going to be reprinted in Modern Masters 2015, so you have at least another... year and a half, 2 years before it's going to potentially get reprinted. So I think you have some opportunity there to get in on it. What do you think about the GP promo hurting this? I'm not a fan of the GP promo at all. Like, it's super dark. It's hard to even read the card, look at the card art.
What I've heard is that it's not super popular. I mean, based on what's happened to the price so far, it seems that a lot of people share that sentiment, I think. So I don't know. I feel like you're probably good there. It's probably hit its bottom, especially if it's still seeing as much play. I'm not big into modern right now, so I guess I don't know exactly what the format holds, but it seems fine.
I think Snapcaster is a little bit safer.
Yeah, I was going to say Snapcaster as my pick, but I feel like that's so cheating because everyone should just see that one coming.
Yeah, because the important thing to note is if this hadn't occurred to you before, the stuff in Innistrad block is precluded, based on how they have structured Modern Masters 2. So if there was any uncertainty in those prices based on, it could be an impending reprint. We're not ruling out a reprint on Snapcaster Mage because there are other ways to reprint cards. But anybody that was worried about it being in Modern Masters 2 and, that was potentially causing some uncertainty in the card price, that's not a thing anymore. It's not going to be in Modern Masters 2. So, I mean, Geist, maybe Huntmaster, I don't know. The stuff from, the stuff from Innistrad and block forward is safe. Even if it's played a lot in modern. So that's something to think about.
Honestly, here's a good one too. I think Liliana of the Veil. I think that's probably my pickup. Everyone's been saying sell for so long, and I think they were correct there for a while. But really, I mean, you don't want to be buying them at retail now. You don't even really want to be trading for them at retail. However, the buy list value on them has dropped enough in the past couple of months because of this upcoming reprint, that I think now is the time that, when people want to sell you cards and you're buying a buy list, even if you have to buy a little above what the buy list is right now, I think you're going to come out great in the long run because, like I said, this can't be in here. So going forward, you're going to have everyone freaking out about this promo, and then once they realize how few of these promos are out there, you're going to see this price skyrocket, which is also going to coordinate right about the time that Modern Masters is releasing. Everyone's getting back into Modern. The market itself is just going to be in an influx of people trying to pick up cards for the stuff that wasn't in the set, and I think Liliana is going to be one of those cards. I wouldn't be surprised to see her back in the $70 to $80 range before she, gets down to $30 or $40 anytime soon.
When she gets reprinted in M16?
It could be an M16. Now it's MM16. See, like, and
It'll be M16. It'll be one more core set. Yeah, so you don't have to worry about that.
Oh, my head is going to explode. I don't even want to think about that. Why did they make – if they make Modern Masters of the new core set too, they need to quit putting M at the beginning of my sets. When I'm set sorting, I am so sick of that. M's is like 10 times the size of every other stack already, and every year they add more on. Like,
That's just rough, ranting. Dude.
Yeah, so they were going to reprint Liliana in Theros, and they decided against that M15, but they decided against it because of Thoughtseize. And I think that she potentially just got pushed back until M16 because it'll be just a short window that Thoughtseize will be around.
But even still, I think that there's a window there between the promo coming out and everyone realizing that price is okay, and then M15 itself.
I see.
Or M16 itself. I think there's plenty of time to act on that. I don't necessarily know that, like, you need to be getting into these, but like I said, if you can get them cheap or you can get them, like, under retail, because a lot of people right now are just, like, they have this mentality of, oh, it's getting reprinted. Like, every person I talk to has a Liliana, that's the first thing they say about it. So if, like, you really realize how small of an impact that reprint is going to have, you can get through, you know, the idea that, okay, the price is going to drop a little bit when it's reprinted, and understand that, like, that price is going to go right back up once that modern appeal is back in. And you're going to have, what, from May until August before that happens, which, you know, assume you're going to find out about Liliana a month in advance. So you still have May through the beginning of July to move these. And I think that seems fine to me. I think the price will have stabilized by then. And like I said, the more people that are getting into modern, which we saw what happened last time, modern didn't have any more demand ever in the history of the format than right after Modern Masters came out. And that's because everyone suddenly, like, they got their playset of Goyce, or they got their playset of whatever it was they needed that made their deck, you know, so expensive before. And even if those cards were expensive, if they opened one or two of them in a booster pack, it was much easier to justify going out and spending the extra $200 to pick up the rest of their set. And then they would pick up whatever else they need. So anything that wasn't in Modern Masters really took a big jump there for a little while, just because people had to pick it up to finish out these tier one decks that they were trying to work on. I think we're going to see the same thing with Modern Masters too. I mean, there's a number of cards that tie in with that. I mean, if I'm really going off on a limb, I think Siege Rhino is a fine pickup right now. Everyone thinks I'm crazy for that one, but I think not only for standard purposes, but Siege Rhino is going to see more and more modern play, especially if they potentially ban Treasure Cruise going forward. I think that just makes the Siege Rhino decks even better.
Yep.
There's all sorts of things that you can really draw from this. I mean, the picks of the week can be a long list now.
Are you just going to, like, pause and then launch into another five-minute diatribe every time I try to say my pick of the week?
Yep. Well, that's what you do every week. So
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I do to you.
Now you get to happen to you, and now you don't like it. Oh.
I just want to know when I can start.
Go ahead.
You can start. Go ahead.
My pick. Oh, I fainted. You guys didn't go for it. My pick of the week
is
called
Oath of Fortitude.
Yeah.
You knew it was coming.
Good. You were good, Marcel.
Oh, that was a good one. You waited through the first one.
Oh, man. I got to faint twice next time. Get you with the old Mighty Ducks triple deke. My pick of the week is called Oath of Forgemaster. This card probably should have gone up. When they announced a really good new EDH general that used as artifacts. Probably should have gone up when people saw it got played on camera at the GP in Edison. I think people tried to make it go up, but I think the fact that, you know, everything everyone said about it logically made sense. Other than the fact that, you know, when it got played on camera at Edison, it wasn't a new deck. And something like, you know, the Fate Stitcher thing. Fate Stitcher went from 8 cents to $3 because everyone was super excited about the Fate Stitcher and needed it. Cold Oath the Forgemaster is not a card that is new and people want to run out, but if you see what happened with something like Forced Fruition with Nekusar, I think Duretti, you know, was in the best value or the second best value of those Commander 2014 decks. So the fact that people bought those and just took the cards out and trashed the rest of it, you know, Nekusar was in a deck that people bought just for the True Name Nemesis, and then the rest of the deck was kind of trash. If anything even close to that's happening this time, I think a lot more people are going to build Duretti decks because he's so good, and you need a Cold Oath of Forgemaster in those decks. So the foil price, I look at EDH cards, and when I see the foil price spike and the non-foil price not spike yet, it doesn't tell me that only the foils are going to spike because of EDH. It's just going to take some time for the non-foil prices to catch up, because EDH players don't buy stuff by playsets, and they don't really speculate. They're like, oh, I need this card for my deck. I'm going to buy that one foil copy. So you're going to see the EDH effect in the foil price first and then in the non-foil later. So the fact that we've already seen, you know, Cold Oath the Forgemaster and foil spike sort of verifies that there's EDH demand for it, and I think the non-foil could go up. We saw the same thing with Proteus Staff, and we're seeing Proteus Staff non-foil finally start to creep up. So I think you have a chance now to buy Forgemaster. You know, even though it was a card that Chaz Andrews talked about, I think when it was on camera and Douglas Johnson mentioned, and we haven't seen it go up, I just think it hasn't gone up yet. I really think that this card is poised.
That's fair. I like that one. Actually, another interesting aside, not when you mentioned artifacts, I think something that we know is not getting reprinted and will be relevant going forward, artifact lands that are played in the Legacy Affinity deck, not necessarily because they're going to spike and be a ton, because we've seen all these commons on commons going up here recently. I think that we know those aren't getting reprinted because they're banned in Modern, and with everything else in Affinity becoming cheaper, that's a really good spec target that you know is going to be necessary still, you know is not getting reprinted, probably won't be reprinted anytime in the future, honestly, because they don't really feel like they need those cards into Modern at any point, and they have clearly said they don't care that much about Legacy. So I could see some of these lands being $2, $3, $4 a piece in the future, and it really baffles me that some of them haven't already hit those numbers. So I've watched them creep up slowly over the past year and go from being really minimal picks to now most of them hitting close to the 50-cent range on a buy list, some of them up to a dollar, and I wouldn't be surprised to see those being $2 or $3 next year if Affinity really does become, you know, kind of the new mono red for Legacy, as it looks like it might be.
Sounds good.
Yep. Anybody else got anything relevant?
Do we have anything else to talk about? I mean, Worlds did happen. Shanhar, he's the 2-time winning world's champ. Back-to-back wins.
Just like the USA, winning back-to-back world wars.
The USA, wow. Actually, JR, he mentioned that John Finkel was the last reigning
last
U.S.
American.
Champ.
Yeah.
14 years it's been since the United States has been the world champ in Magic.
Really?
Yeah, we haven't had an American world championship winner since Finkel.
Oh, that's sad.
2000.
Oh, yeah. Don't tell me that. That makes me feel sad.
Why?
Not for that. It just makes me sad because, like, I remember, like, hearing about that. And, like, that doesn't feel like 14 years ago. It was, oh.
You're old and decrepit.
No, it's not even that. Like, how was that 14 years ago? Like,
how was 2000 14 years ago? Well, yeah. You see, Ryan.
No, I'm not talking about this. We're not doing this. My 10-year class reunion's coming up this year. I don't want to talk about that either.
You're a nerd. You won't get invited. Don't worry.
Bust out the calculator. Let's do some math.
I wasn't a super nerd in high school.
They don't want to have to build a ramp for you to be able to go to the...
I'm just going to go money draft lifestyle and rain dollar bills all over that country hick town. And I don't know. That probably won't get me any more respect, but then I'll have less dollar bills. So
yeah, you should make it rain... Scratch off lottery tickets or picture of Dale Earnhardt or something.
Ooh, I like it. Earnhardt's for all. Just print off. I'm just gonna print off Groupons and sit there and cash out the Groupons. Here you go. I bought you a buy one get one free massage.
Here's 25% off taxidermy. They'd like that.
Oh man, butcher your deer here and you get 2 pounds of jerky for free. There's all sorts of good ones, man. I'm gonna go Grouponing for my. I'm not going to do that at all. I'm probably not even going to go to my class reunion. It sounds depressing.
Yeah, I didn't get invited to mine because no one contacted me. Because I'm super hard to find. If you want to find me, I'm Jason E. Ault on Twitter. I write for Gathering Magic and QuietSpeculation.com. My email is altjason17@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook. I post on Reddit regularly. I guess what I'm saying is, if you wanted to find me to invite me to a 10-year high school reunion, it would be next to impossible.
Well, considering your 10 years was like 10 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, you're a funny guy. I'm the class of 2002.
Oh, you guys are all young.
You're really only 4 years older than me?
Only 4 years older than you.
Oh, all right. Well, class-wise, anyway. Marcel, what are you, like class of 88?
No, class of 2000. I was supposed to be 99, but I had a bad year.
That sounds like a real bad year.
Yeah, I got a 0.0 on my GPA a couple times.
You know, if you'd done better, your high school's class's graduation song wouldn't have been, that vitamin C song, so you messed up.
Yeah, I got to do a graduation speech though, and I got a quote put in the front page of the newspaper the next day. So hey, at least I said something right.
There you go. It's okay, yeah, Marcel. Lots of people go to high school for 5 years.
Come to find out, the things they said about me at my high school graduation, none of them came to fruition or actually at all close to what I'm doing now for a living. So that's fine. Everybody's going to be like, oh, so you're some big successful engineer. I'm like, nah, actually, let me tell you a little story about how I sling magic cards for a living. And people are going to have a clue what I'm talking about, and that'll be the end of the story. So.
See, I was voted most likely to become a crackhead, so you know, I proved them wrong.
Really?
Now he does meth instead. You guys are.
No, I think I was voted most likely to go to jail for some sort of white collar crime. So I mean, that's probably still not wrong, I guess.
I was voted least likely to get invited to the 10-year reunion.
Oh.
It's like getting a rejection letter from a safety school. Something else that happened.
Nothing productive, at least.
All right, guys, that's where I can be found. Where can the rest of you be found?
That's not where it's going to happen.
Not here necessarily, but like there's a weird tangent. But
yeah, I can be found on Twitter at chosler88. chosler88. Okay, preps hashtag.
You can also find him on the Buffalo Wild Wings website, where he is the number one rated fan.
Yeah, where if your order gets screwed up, Corbin says, don't worry, they'll put the refund on my account.
True story. Yeah. This is not made up.
Yeah, I appreciate that Corbin has an account with Buffalo Wild Wings.
I wonder if he's overdue.
Yeah. Oh, no, but in all honesty, I probably should put my information out there because I think this is like the third week in a row I've completely avoided that question. You can find me at Cripple Command, CRYPPLE Command. And there's now a picture of Shamble Shark as my picture. So it's been the same picture for like years. So don't freak out. I have changed that now. Not that anyone knew would know that, but yeah,
or cared.
Yeah, or cared. How about you, Marcel? Pick it up. Pick up my scraps. Make this work.
You can find me at MarcelMTG on Twitter. And maybe occasionally on Moto whenever I do get the opportunity to play. But this month is looking busy as hell also, so I don't know if that's going to happen.
Man, whatever. I haven't played Moto in like a week. That stinks. I was trying to get back into it, and my computer freaking completely died on me. I have not had any form of Hearthstone, Moto, League of Legends, anything for over a week now. And I must say, I'm being super productive. I've plugged my Xbox in for movies and Netflix, and that is all I've been doing.
I actually need to learn how to play a standard. I'm going to go to GP Denver. I should be able to play a standard deck or something. I get out there. Fucking Magic. I haven't played all year.
Magic sucks. It's for nerds.
Oh,
nerds.
I built this really cool deck, though, for the casual.
Nerd.
Yeah.
No, tell us about your deck, Marcel.
Sure. It's
nerd.
Awesome.
Nerd.
Eat a dick. Okay, my deck involves a phallus and this hair that grows off of it, along with two nuts. And what you're supposed to do is chomp on that.
All right, guys. I'm going to see if I can't get my draft recorded tonight.
All right. We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.